Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Control Risks Briefing conference call. My name is Joy, and I'll be your operator for today. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your phone and immediately record your name, followed by the pound key. If you have any questions that require operator assistance, please press star followed by 0, and an operator will be happy to assist you. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host for today, Mr. Steve Wilford.
Thank you very much, Joy, and good morning and afternoon, everybody. My name's Steve Wilford. I'm the Senior Managing Director for Global Risk Analytics at Control Risks, and I sit in Singapore. Now, before I introduce our other speakers, let me just explain what we'll do over the next 30 minutes. We won't rehash the attack in Jakarta in any kind of deep details. That's been done very well in the media already. This will be a much more of a forward-thinking exercise, assessing the likelihood of further attacks, the motivations behind it, what practically you can do as travelers and operators in Indonesia in response to it. Hopefully that will give you some useful takeaways from our discussion here. Now, joining me today, as Singapore, is our senior Indonesia analyst, Steve Norris, and he's going to be just talking briefly about what this means for Indonesia terrorism risk, the attacks of yesterday. And also sat with me here is Matthias Wieser, who's our head of crisis and security consulting for the region. And he, along with Corin Azhed, our senior consultant in Jakarta, and John Herzog, the head of our Jakarta operation, who are also on the line, they're going to be looking at the tactical implications of this attack for you as people running businesses in Indonesia. There's a lot of interest surrounding this. There's 170 different callers on the line this morning. So just as brief introduction, I just want to just point out a couple of things why why we're actually doing this this call this morning. The attacks of yesterday, where we saw five attackers killed, attempting to mount multiple attacks on a police post, a Starbucks restaurant, and the vicinity of the Serena department store in central Jakarta, would appear to mark a tactical change in terrorism. This is the most significant terrorist attack that Indonesia's experienced since July 2009, when we had the last spate of fixed-point hotel bombings, which were a recurrent feature of the early to mid-2000s in Indonesia. This time around, the attacks would seem to be reminiscent of more recent attacks that we've seen in Paris, in California, and that led to a lot of speculation that the inspiration for what happened in Jakarta yesterday followed a format established by Islamic State. So, does that really matter? What are the implications in terms of further terrorist attacks? Does this mark a pivot in what businesses have to think about in terms of securing their people? So that's what we're going to look at today. Now, I'm going to just kick things off at the more strategic level with Steve Norris. I'm just going to ask you, Steve, what do you know about this terrorist attack so far?
Good morning, everybody. Well, so far we don't know much with any kind of certainty, but we can probably be quite confident that a few things are going to emerge around the profile of the attackers from yesterday. The first will be some form of operational or personality-based link between the cell that carried out the attack and the most active domestic group based in Central Sulawesi, abbreviated MIT, which is the kind of hub for the dispersed Indonesian militant networks active today. The second will be, at the very least, an ideological affiliation with Islamic State in the Middle East, and an aspiration to emulate world-famous IS operations within Indonesia. The perpetrators will probably have been individuals who have traced allegiance to IS, perhaps among those who tried to travel to the Middle East to join IS but were prevented by the Indonesian authorities. It's probably less likely that they're from the first batches of Indonesian returnees from Syria, and that this was one of the first attacks carried out by any persons with direct Islamic State experience. You could almost certainly connect them easily to the Islamic State recruitment networks in Indonesia through Syria, but they're probably more aspirant than actual Islamic State. So far, the police are linking them to an Indonesian based in Syria called Darul Ha'im, who recruits Indonesians to go there. It isn't really clear if that's based on any specific evidence or if it's an assumption due to the fact that Ha'im praised the Paris attacks in an online post. He's been linked to a number of failed plots in Indonesia previously, an August Independence Day plot in Central Java, and he was detected in November wiring money to another cell in Indonesia that was busted in December. Other Indonesians in his faction, in his Islamic State faction in Syria, are also said to have arranged for a small group of weaker militants to join that MIT group in Poso in Sulawesi to bolster its ranks. Ha'im doesn't have any formal armed Islamic State networks in Indonesia today, and there's no other general armed Islamic State structure in the country under the control of any other Islamic State member. So his involvement yesterday, whether it went beyond inspiring online, maybe part funding the perpetrators in their daily lives, to include any kind of direct instruction or tactical guidance, that would be important to discern. It was the first time we've seen an indiscriminate attack in Jakarta since 2009, as Steve said. So there's been several failed efforts to carry out IS-style attacks in the last year, a big increase in the number of plots. The shift from targeting police, religious minorities, to civilians indiscriminately in downtown areas of major cities, it didn't occur yesterday. But yesterday was the first time that the current crop of militants actually managed to pull such an attack off.
And in terms of that's the intensity. What about the capability? I mean, 5 terrorists dead, 2 civilian casualties, a number of arrests. It wasn't exactly a singular success as a terrorist attack. I mean, how do you feel about the ability of these guys to pull off significant attacks in the future?
No, you're right. The shift in Indonesia has been more in terms of intent at this stage than in terms of enhanced capability. The IS brand has breathed quite a significant degree of new life into the older Southeast Asian militant networks that originally built out from Al-Qaeda and Jamaat Islamiyah. The brand potency has meant that some of the senior militant leaders who had, after Jakarta 2009, viewed indiscriminate attacks as tactical blunders in that they invited police scrutiny, they've lost a lot of relevance now. There's evolved a much larger recruitment pool of militants inspired by the Islamic State message, particularly in the suburbs of Jakarta. And the groups like MIT and Poso have become more resilient as a result of that. The estimates of the number of Indonesians travelling to the Middle East range between 350, 700, I don't think the authorities really know. And there's a larger number who've been detected on route, blocked and kept at home. The counter-terrorism bodies can't possibly monitor all of them. And that's, I think, why we're seeing this change in the number of attacks, this more obvious intent to attack. As you say, we shouldn't overstate the risk. This new intent to kill and to go out all guns blazing on very visible manners. But the militant groups are still heavily restricted in terms of skills, tactical nous, material resources. And as crass as it does sound, yesterday's attacks could have been a lot worse if they'd just done a few things slightly differently, the perpetrators. So we at Control Risk, we rate the Indonesian terrorism risk for Jakarta and other potential targets like Bali, Surabaya. We rate it at medium, but we would probably consider it a lighter shade of medium than for example, major European cities where it's also medium.
Okay, thanks, Steve. So, I mean, obvious question and the most difficult one, could it happen again? Will it happen again? When will it happen?
Yes, it definitely could happen again. And it could be worse. As I said, that was the first plot in recent times to get past the police, to get past Census 88, which is a pretty effective counter-terrorism agency, at least in terms of spoiling plots. And the first attack to cause casualties. But there's been a number of other attempts to do something like this in recent months. And a couple of instances where explosives have been found or they've gone off in public places, malls in satellite areas of Jakarta, but they've not caused significant damage or casualties. The one line summary would give for Indonesian terrorism risk, there will be a large number of plots hatched by generally poorly resourced groups, but every once in a while one will slip past Census 88 and have possibly serious impacts in places like Jakarta and Bali. But those aren't, and for the time being at least, they were not going to become the norm. That they're not going to be the standard for terrorism incidents in Indonesia, and most will be smaller, less visible, less significant than what happened yesterday. The wild cards here are people like Halim in Syria, the prospective figurehead of the feared terrorist groups that could in the future emerge from Indonesian returnees from the Middle East. These are individuals, they're on the periphery in Syria, they're not big names. They could see an opportunity to take on prominent roles in Southeast Asia. They could attempt more ambitious operations in Indonesia to get the recognition of IS headquarters and to develop a name among Indonesian would-be jihadists. So in the mid to longer term, there's a more significant threat to locations like Jakarta. And also feeding into that, there'll be other external events such as developments in the southern Philippines, which will all together shape the extent of that threat, in addition to the Middle East and to Islamic State in the brand Indonesia.
And just as a final quick question, Steve, for you. One of the terrorists were killed yesterday was alleged by the police to be quote unquote a foreigner. To date, most analysts of ISIS have said the distinguishing feature between ISIS and Al Qaeda is it's really just it's outside the actual Islamic State is trying to create in the Middle East. Really, it's just an inspirer of terrorism. It doesn't fund it. It doesn't provide any kind of really detailed and coherent coordination of these of attacks ex Middle East. Do you envisage that persisting, or do you think there's evidence potentially of a much more detailed, direct Islamic State involvement in Indonesian terrorism?
I think if that did happen, it probably wouldn't come from the top guys in Islamic State. It would come from these kind of mid-level people who have the combat experience and the personal connection being the right to see it. So if that is what played out, then it would be kind of as we just described, from someone like Haim, maybe wiring some cash, giving some tactical guidance online. If there was a foreigner yesterday involved, it is certainly plausible. There's some evidence that some Uyghur militants were deployed to the Wasi in the last year. But at the moment, I don't think the Islamic State as an organization at the top level has much interest in Indonesia. Indonesia is not among the coalition of countries launching airstrikes in the Middle East. They're not a priority for the senior leaders.
Okay, interesting. Thank you. What I want to do now is something that's potentially slightly tricky. I want to go over to Corinne Abshead, who's actually down on Jalan Tamrin near where yesterday's violence took place. And I want you to come in on the call if you can, Corinne, and just answer a very tactical question, which is what's the likely fallout for operations in Jakarta following this attack?
Okay, I'll see. I'm actually sitting in a taxi. I'll try and keep the background noise to a minimum. I'm about 300 meters away from yesterday's incident site, having a look at what's going on. But I think, you know, Jakarta is a funny old place. Historically, and particularly after this incident, there, of course, will be a heightened security alert state within the security forces, within the business community here. Any company or office block or hotel, shopping mall that has a security infrastructure will be raising that and bringing in additional measures. I'm sitting outside a key hotel on roundabout Indonesia. They've got very overt presence of armed police, which they don't normally have here, and the area is being full of policemen going up and down the street on motorbikes with weapons and conducting foot patrols. So from a security infrastructure point of view, it's going to be raised. I think that tends to go on for a number of weeks, but obviously as things go on and business reverts to sort of normal operations, you can't keep people on a high level of response and alert readiness forever. So eventually it'll sort of ease off, I think, and hotel security checks will probably become a little bit more lackadaisical, you know, because the guys conducting the checks can't keep being, you know, sort of on full alert for 12 hours a day. Eventually people lose their edge. In the meantime, though, as a result of that, now is the time, really, and I think Matthew will touch on this a bit later, is the time for companies to really review your plans in terms of counterterrorism response, say active shooter plans, liaise with your local security forces. But I think within 3 to 4 weeks, you know, it's business as usual. And even today in Cameroon, it's very much business as usual, apart from the sort of the more visible military and police or police presence here on the streets.
Thanks, Corinne. I did mention that I wasn't going to fall over the detail of yesterday's events, but I just have one quick question for you, because I do think it's important, and it relates to Steve Norris's comments about the probability of further attacks coming along. How do you think the security forces did yesterday in responding to it?
I've got to say, I thought it was pretty commendable. I mean, at the tactical level at the first blast, when the incident kicked off with a blast and a shooting, I think it was visible on what we could see on the media that crowds would immediately sort of rush to the scene of the incident, either out of concern or interest, or, you know, in today's world, everybody wants to rush ahead and get a selfie or video the scene. There are a couple of traffic policemen there who have just seen their colleagues being killed. They're trying to keep the crowds back. But within, I think, 5 to 10 minutes, the spearhead of the counterterrorism and the main police elements arrived on the scene. And from what I could make out, they had a very concise and controlled operational command, you know, of the scene. They wanted to clear the scene. They wanted to coordinate, keep the crowds away, and respond to the terrorist incident. So I think, you know, and having spoken to an associate of mine who's well connected with the counterterrorism community, he said, you know, it really couldn't have gone much better considering what they didn't know and what they were potentially up against. The confusion comes when you get so many different uniforms. We saw dentists, we saw off-duty or plainclothes police, we saw the bomb squad, we saw even the members of the presidential guard, and ultimately the TNI, the military, showed up with armored vehicles. So it can give you the image that command and control can be a bit blurred, but actually, you know, the teams that need to get in there and do what they've been trained to do, they just roll that out, I think, pretty slickly. What was evident was that there is some senior leadership, taking things into their own hands and leading from the front, and really trying to neutralize the threat as quickly as they could. And I think the fact that the police wrapped up the incident to the point where they declared this is now wrapped up and the dignitaries are starting to visit the site within 4 to 5 hours, I think is quite commendable.
Thanks a lot, Corinne. I'll let you get back to paying your taxi fare.
All right, can I just add one thing?
I just in
conversation with somebody, they did say that one of the major challenges that Steve Norris touched upon is the evolving threat and the modus operandi. And there is an understanding here that cells may be operating in isolation. So they're funded and controlled, in complete isolation of other cells, where they might not even know that other cells exist. And so this is where the SF are trying, the security forces are trying to keep ahead of the curve on that. But it's becoming increasingly more difficult to map and link groups and individuals that they used to be able to, because they just don't know of any other groups and individuals that they find out during the interrogation process.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Right, we've got about 7 minutes to go, and I really wanted to get to probably what is the most important question for our clients listening in, and that's essentially what should they be doing in response to this, both in terms of their operations in Indonesia, their traveling personnel. And to answer that question, I want to bring in Matthias Pisa, our head of crisis and security consulting. Matthew, go.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Look, at the end of the day, you know, this is all about keeping up to date with developments. The situation, as we just heard, is not going to go away. It's not going to just stop just because we have seen a major attack and now it will be all clamped down and the security forces will ask that every single terrorist that perhaps could look around somewhere in Indonesia. It's not going to happen. So while this attack is assessed to have required a high level of logistical efforts, we believe, as we said, you know, it could repeat itself in whatever shape or form, and additional attacks will not be ruled out. What this creates is a rumor mill. So what you as an organization have to consider is the difference between, you know, when you have personnel, local nationals and expatriates. Keep your employees informed and updated on any of the developments. What I have to say is, you know, while we have seen a reasonably good report from the Indonesian news agency yesterday about the attack, usually they're not the most reliable source of information when it comes to security-related information. Indonesian personnel, what we have seen, is usually display quite a high level of resilience. However, they will have concerns that they may not necessarily voice them openly. So, you as an organization, it would be good to have to provide a platform for this going forward, particularly over the next week or so. Consider also the needs of your expatriate personnel and families. They will be actively interested and may make upfield decisions on whether to travel to Indonesia, reside in Indonesia, based on what their families perhaps tell them, you know, their loved ones offshore perhaps tell them, and their friends, and even what they read on social media. This leads to the management of the perceived and actual threat that we're dealing with here. Providing reassurance, but usually there's an opportunity to instill security, a safety culture within your organization. Most likely your personnel will ask you, you know, it can happen anytime, anywhere, and we don't have security because perhaps for them it's not visible or they never have been concerned with security. Or, you know, what if it happens at our site, you know, what we should we do? So you need to be prepared to answer these questions confidently. Explain how you as an organization assess risks at your office or your site in terms of the groups, the actors, the modus operandi that we have seen and perhaps that, you know, what we may see going forward. You know, how effective are you as an organization? Why would adversaries choose or not choose you particularly as an organization? State what you're going to do about it. It's not about spending money on large physical security improvements or scaremongering at all. It's about just taking simple steps or simple measures that will instill confidence in your employees that they feel looked after. Review provisions to safeguard assets. So what do you have in place to preempt, anticipate or respond to events as an organization? So it's time to refresh on your security posture, I would say. Review the risks and assess whether you need to or should make any changes. Determine the measures from, you know, physical and a technical security point of view that you've got in place and that perhaps would help aiding reducing the likelihood or the impact of such events. Key for international organization is involving local staff when you go through this process and preparing for it. They are the only ones that really know the country on the back of their hand. Dust off your crisis and incident management plans. You know, check if they're still up to date and still perhaps reflect the organizational setups. You may have gone through changes or may have hired additional personnel or expanded and perhaps not really looked at this plane because, as you have seen, in Indonesia was a reasonably untouched country up until the last 10, 12 months perhaps. Have your team convene simply and run through a desktop discussion to verify roles or contact numbers, escalation criteria, check you on your first response in the office, your medical provisions that you've got, look into, stand fast locations, particularly in light of these types of events. Look into remote work options to ensure business continuity if it does happen and you want to make sure, okay, we're not going to have people go to the office for the next 2 days. They can still log on from home and perhaps conduct some work from home. Try your call tree setup and look into your accounting processes. With international companies particularly, one of the first questions is always, do we have all of our people accounted for? And it takes time usually to do that. So the better you set up, the faster you can respond. So if you do these things now, they will fall on fertile ground because it's in the forefront of everyone's thoughts. And this will definitely help in tackling any potential future events.
Thanks, Matthew. Very useful, very practical. That concludes our formal 30 minutes. What I'd like to do now is open for questions, and I think Joy, our operator, will just give you some instructions as to how to do that. Joy?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask an audio question, please press star 1 on your phone and immediately record your name, followed by the pound key. To ensure your question is registered, you must record your name. If your question has been answered or if you would like to withdraw your question, please press star 2. Questions will be taken in the order received, and we will pause momentarily to compile a list of questions. Again, please press star 1 and immediately record your name to begin.
Thanks, Joy. Now, whilst those questions are queuing up, if any, somebody did get in touch with me this morning. They had a regional remit, as I just suspect many of you listening do as well. And their somewhat tricky question was, does this Jakarta attack have any broader implications for terrorism risk in the Asia-Pacific region? I'll have a go at trying to answer that. The front end of that is yes, I think it does. And it actually relates to what Steve Norris said earlier. It's not about the funding. It's not particularly about the training. I think it's about the demonstrative effect. I think it's about the inspiration an attack, a high-profile attack like this in the center of Jakarta, will have on other people with a similar intent around the region and within Indonesia and beyond. These aren't the first ISIS claimed casualties in the region, actually, in recent months. Those of you who've had dealings with Bangladesh will know that the foreign investment community there was deeply shaken by what can only be described as assassinations of foreign nationals late last year by groups that ostensibly claimed some kind of affiliation to ISIS. Another jurisdiction of concern, I think, probably should be Malaysia. And the reason why they say that is Malaysia's also sent significant numbers of fighters to Iraq and Syria to join ISIS, and a number of them have already returned to the country. A more worrying dimension, perhaps even compared to Indonesia, is that many of those people who went to Iraq from Malaysia were actually former or serving personnel within the Malaysian armed forces, so they already had the training in weapons and explosives before they went. And there's been a number of arrests of such people. That is a significant mitigation in the Malaysian context, in that Malaysia does control its jurisdiction rather more efficiently than Indonesia does. perhaps just bringing Steve back in for a brief second, Philippines is probably another area of concern. What are your thoughts on Philippines in terms of ISIS-related terrorism threats?
Philippines is a big concern. I think if you're watching the region, the thing, probably the biggest thing to watch would be the fate of a peace and autonomy agreement the Philippine government has going with the big Moro separatist group in Mindanao in the south. That deal is kind of hanging by a thread. The reason it's significant is because the Southeast Asian networks in their original state in the 2000s, when they were carrying out big attacks in places like Bali, Jakarta, Australian embassy, even the 2009 hotel attacks, the cells that carried them out, they all graduated from a Mindanao training network that was enabled because the separatist group, the MILF, was at that time in conflict with the Philippine government and was providing sanctuary, was providing training, weapons, and kind of importing militant expertise from across the region, but even further afield. So if that peace deal goes down the drain, and it's currently looking like it might do, then there would be the prospect of Mindanao becoming, to a much more significant extent than it is now, a training ground and a breeding ground for more sophisticated militant groups, and a kind of operational stepping stone from Syria into the Southeast Asian region.
Thanks, Steve. Okay, so I'll hand back to Joy and see if we've got any questions coming through. Joy?
We do have a question from the line of
Fajar Daily from Ophir, Indonesia.
Please proceed.
Hello, James. My name is Fajar Daily from Indonesia. I'm External Relations and Security Manager. I have one question about, actually a couple of questions. First about the intensity of the attacks. We see that in the attacks, these people, they have factory-made weapons like pistols and also firearms, which are not self-made. This shows access to either funds or access to illegal weapon smuggling. So, my question regarding the tactical also. The second fact is that 6 kilometers away from the location, there are Yusuf Kalla is testifying from Ophir, Indonesia. Yusuf Kalla is testifying at Tipikor building, and the security there was very heightened. And the fact that first responder to the attack was senior ranking officers from those area shows that the reason that yesterday attack was not successful is because of that. That's just my opinion. So is there any just I'm just curious because previously Steve Norris said that this is a very it's not really that great impact. It's not really successful. But is there any other analysis that it might have been gone very wrong? So there are no security, heightened security at Tipikor building, which is only 6.6 kilometer away. And the fact that the police came there in like 6 to 7 minutes, their senior management, 2 cars, 4th car Ops Polda, Kabak Ops Polsek, and the Kapolsek itself, who happened to be at Tipikor, they are the one who shot that three perpetrators. So the fact is showing that should that security is not there, it will happen immediately. Now, the second question is about how do
you... First one, if we just jump in on your first one. So to summarize your question, yesterday's attack, I said it was something of a failure. Steve Norris, was that... Was it a failure because the security forces were lucky or good at their jobs?
It could have been a lot worse. It could have been a lot worse, but I think the first thing that wasn't necessarily to do with the security response, it was to do with the way that the militants on the ground utilized the weapons and the materials that they did have. They could have inflicted a lot more damage if they had detonated their devices in a different location, in a different way. I definitely take your point about the fortuitous location of the most equipped and proficient security forces. We can't really say what would have happened if they hadn't been there, if they'd been somewhere else. But I take your point, it could have been a lot worse, and to an extent there was definitely a degree of luck there that they were placed just down the road at Civico.
Okay. Do you want to hit us with your second question very quickly?
Very quickly. Previous way to mitigate bomb threat usually in any organization is just go to the to your safe location. Now since the threat is now shifting, it's not only bomb but followed by shifting. Will that pattern? I mean, when the bomb explodes and then you go to your safe place outside of the building, will that be still be suitable? Because it can be then when the bomb explodes and you go outside your building to your safe place, and then someone will shove you. So yeah. will there any advice on that?
That's a very very good question. I'm going to hand this one to Matthew first of all.
Yeah. As you correctly said, we've seen this shift in patterns of how types of attacks are occurring. Based on what we've seen over the past years, not just in Southeast Asia but globally, the procedures associated with explosions or complex attacks, particularly after the Mumbai attack, have changed. So the procedures that we would advise now is for an explosion to occur in proximity is always a stand-fast position, so you wouldn't evacuate the building at all. You would stay within the building, you would stay within the room, you would not leave the building, because as soon as you have people, as you correctly said, go outside, they become a target. And it's very difficult to account, you don't know where they are and they're scattered around, particularly in complex scenarios where you have multiple shooters with multiple explosive devices and weapons roaming an area. So you want to be in lockdown.
Okay, lockdown, yeah. Okay.
Okay, thank you. Joy, do you have any other questions?
Yes, we do have a question from the line of...
Just had a question about your views on security arrangements around Sukarno Hatta Airport specifically.
Karen, are you still on the line by any chance? Karen, I'd say. If not, I'll hand this one over to John.
I'm in a bit of a noisy location. I heard the question. I'm actually heading up there in about half an hour. I anticipate that there'll be additional security there in terms of visible armed police, etc. The security checks at airports in Sukarno Hatta and Halley, and actually provincial airports recently, has been increased quite noticeably. You have to take your belt off, your watch off. They do check your bag, they do check your pockets. So I would say it's more in line with what you would expect in the US or the UK as well, which is kind of encouraging despite the inconvenience. So I think today's Sukarno Hatta will be an interesting one. I think checking will be perhaps a little slower than usual. But I think the main difference will be more armed police, and I can verify that with my team later. It's a visible presence and patrolling. But once you're in the airport, I think it'll be standard remove belt, remove watch, and make sure your laptop's taken out. So I hope that's, I hope I'm right on that.
And Corinne, just in terms of the airport's preparedness for an external assault by shooters, which is perhaps what we're thinking about rather than sort of airside procedures. Any signs of any changes there in terms of...
I haven't heard of that, but I know that the general statement is that security has been increased at all travel hubs around the country. That's been going on for a few weeks, but I haven't heard of any specific plans in terms of response and changing or deploying additional resources. Although, with units like Dentsus, the Air Force have their own Special Forces Counterterrorism team, sort of the Navy, I think that these units, particularly in the light of yesterday, will be more close and ready to deploy. Sukarno Hatta is not an airport that the government wants any incidents in. I'm sure that there'll be units lurking around the corner, doing the best they can to be ready to respond. A lot of security forces in Indonesia do carry out very advanced counter-terrorism exercises, even though they're not actually the sort of tier-run special forces. You know, police, regular police units and army units do have the kit and the capability, and they do joint venture training up in the counter-terrorism center up in Bangor. So I'm sure that there are plans in place, but I don't think they're for public, they're in the public domain.
Thanks, Corey. Joy, do we have time for a last question, if there is one?
Yes, we do have a question from the line of...
Rico.
Please proceed.
Hey guys, my name is Rico from BHP Bilton Indonesia.
Hi, Rico.
Our office is not located that far away from the incident, probably about a couple of kilometers away, and... basing also from what Steve Norris said earlier, that this is one of the high-profile attacks since the last 2009, which, you know, just, they have a specific kind of target, and this is way much more than that. I was wondering if anybody would agree that this is some kind of it is an escalation of an attack, but whether this is some kind of a tryout. Because the number of terrorists that they send out, the number of explosives that they have, it's too small. And the location that they pick, even though it's within the congested areas, it's not really where you want to go big with what you have. And I was wondering, related also with what Fajar said earlier, that this could be a failure, but this might be the way that they perceive, oh, so this is how it went if we go this route. And judging from what happened yesterday, where a lot of people are not dispersing, but they're actually congregating, you know, they might not be so discriminated for their next attack. They just might go all out and just blasting anyone within their path. I was wondering if that could be the next possible scenarios for what they have in mind. What do you guys think?
Steve, I think it's probably true. It's definitely just the new in being the terrorist attack, that kind of style. I doubt it was a specific trial mission for something that's imminently planned, but it will be something that the likes, the possible handlers in Syria who may have had a role in inspiring it, they'll probably take some look at what happened yesterday and post some commentary on a publicly available channel, and there'll be some kind of tactical, you know, analysis of what could have been done differently, how more damage could have been done, and then on paper there will be a recognition that they could inflict more damage if the next cell that tries something does things a little bit differently, and then we're back to the issue of capability.
Matthew,
yeah, I think, you know, also the issue we've got in, particularly in this case, is a change in pattern or a regional pattern. We haven't really seen anything. It was quite surprising, you know, that, you know, the first thing that was attacked was a police hut, just in a more quiet area in Jakarta. The problem we've got now is it's not against a particular hotel, it's not against particular Western operated interests, it's not particularly against the police, it's kind of a general infliction of an incident upon the civilian population. So your question is kind of right in terms of it can, I think, happen anywhere. I don't think we can actually pinpoint that it's going against a particular organization or entity. And that's the biggest challenge we've got at the moment.
Okay. Thanks, Matty. There's been a lot of questions. George, I think you've just got time to take one more if there is one.
We have no further questions at this time.
Okay, great. So we've overrun slightly. If anybody on the line does have any further questions, they can drop them into me in writing. And we can get back to you. My email address is steve.wilford@controlrisk.com. steve.wilford@controlrisk.com. If you have any additional thoughts surrounding the call or any commentary, any feedback on how you felt the content went, then I'd be very keen to hear from you. So with that, we conclude this morning's talk, analyzing the attacks of yesterday in Jakarta. We wish you all a very good day. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect. Have a great day.